The Talk of Mid-Maryland, 930 WFMD.
This is the 930 WFMD Weekend Free Talk Express, featuring highlights from local talk shows with your host, Bob Dacey.
Hello, I'm Bob Dacey, and welcome to WFMD's Weekend Free Talk Express, where we revisit some of the best talk shows we have on the air for the past week. So let's sit back, relax, and listen to what we have in store for you on this week's show.
Well, one of the features we offer during the week here on WFMD is take a look at what newsmakers are doing. And I thought we'd give Jan Gardner a send-off in that she is serving her last few minutes in office today. And there'll be a new boss in town starting on Monday. Her last initiative that she set up was Rural Roads. And here's the outline, basically, of what the Rural Roads program legacy is that she's leaving behind. Been doing a Christmas Cash for Kids, and just thought I would pull a section of it out to let you know, in case you really haven't seen or heard, how all of Christmas Cash for Kids actually got started. So here is the story as it began way back on Monday at 6 a.m. Well, WFMB occasionally gets some specials in, and since we didn't have a lot of free public broadcasting this past week with callers and guests and so forth, what we did was to take a look at some of the stories we had, like over, and the big story you all know this past fall was not just what happened during the elections, but how it happened, and I have some cuts here from Fox News that talked a little bit about how this past election shook down and why it happened the way it did. So without further ado, let's take a listen to this first cut dealing with the mysterious fall election results.
And with us now is Tom Bevan, co-founder and president of RealClearPolitics.com, at Tom Bevan RCP on Twitter, if you want to follow him there. Tom, happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for being here.
Same to you, Guy.
All right, so you and I spoke on the show many, many times in the lead up to the midterm elections about polling, the accuracy of polling, and boy, that conversation gets only more interesting and more murky and more complicated after the midterms, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, look, this was a very unique election. I think the more we dig in the data and the more it settles out, the more, you know, we are surprised by, you know, how this thing turned out. I mean, Democrats really did defy history and some really bad fundamentals to perform stronger than I think a lot of folks, including myself, thought they would. A couple of things. The national vote, which, you know, Republicans did fairly well. I mean, we'll see where the final number. It usually takes quite some time for that to get settled, but it should be somewhere in the 3 to 4 point range for Republicans, which is pretty darn close to where our average was for the generic congressional ballot. Finished at, I think, 2.5. So, and then at the state level, you had in some of these Senate races, you know, the polling in some states was fairly accurate in places like Ohio, for example, North Carolina, Wisconsin was a little bit underestimated Dem support there. But then you had a place like, you know, New Hampshire, where Maggie Hassan won convincingly. None of the polls really saw that coming. And in Florida, it was the opposite, where you had, you know, Marco Rubio was up about 9 points in our average. Most polls had him anywhere from 8 to 12, and he won by 16. So his support and DeSantis's support was understated there. And then you had these, you know, close competitive elections. You know, I think Fetterman performed better than almost anybody saw, any pollster saw happening there. Even some of the mainstream polls didn't have him winning by the amount he won by. Most of the polls had the race in Georgia going to a runoff, which is where it ended. So, It's sort of a mixed bag, and we'll see when we dig in the numbers. You know, I think by and large, just a quick glance through some of these states and the results, I think Trafalgar, Robert Cahaly, whose group had been one of the most accurate pollsters over the last three cycles, had a rough night. They were projecting, a Republican wave, a surge. And some other pollsters like, you know, Marist and some of those folks did, I think, reasonably well. So we'll see when we get our final pollster rankings out exactly where things shake out. But it was a mixed bag, I think.
Tom, I saw a comment from Stan Greenberg, who's a prominent Democratic pollster, and he said that, at least according to his data, there was a huge, huge number, like a giant chunk of the vote, much larger than usual, that decided within the last day or two of the cycle. And I think a lot of people were expecting, understandably, based on trends and patterns and history and all of it, and the fundamentals that you mentioned, they expected a lot of those people to decisively break for the opposition party. That didn't happen. You look at pure independence, they very narrowly went for the Democrats, basically a split, which is great news for the Democrats, concerning news for the Republicans. But those late deciders, and the fact that there were so many of them, and I guess there was this gut check where a bunch of them said, I'm not really sure I can vote for the Republicans, certainly certain types of Republicans suffered, whereas other types of Republicans did extremely well or overperformed. That effect, that final last-minute decision group, especially if it's a big group, and especially if it cuts against the conventional wisdom, that throws a huge monkey wrench sometimes into the polling and the expectations, doesn't it?
It does, and I haven't looked at that data specifically, but I remember looking in Pennsylvania, for example, and there were very few undecideds, 4% in some of the polls there, and in some of these other races. I'd have to dig more into that to see if that's actually true. But what is true, and I think you pointed it out, I mean, this to me is the most interesting piece of this election, is that independents went for the Democrats by 2 points, 51-49. That is a huge break from recent history, general history, but especially recent history. When you think about recent midterms in 2018, Democrats, independents sided with the Democrats by 12 points. In 14, they sided with the Republicans by 12 points. In 2010, which was a 63-seat shellacking for Obama, independents sided with the Republicans by 15 points. And in 2006, which was a bad, bad year for Republicans, independents sided with Democrats by 18 points. So, I'm digging into exactly why did independents not do what they traditionally have done in midterms? And again, you look at the data, they had a very sour opinion of Joe Biden. I mean, his approval rating, his favorability rating, inflation was their number one concern. I've gone back and looked through all the pre-election polls, and it wasn't close between inflation and the economy and abortion. When you look at the exit polls, it was a lot closer. For some reason, independents really were, I think, susceptible and bought into, I think, the Democrats' arguments, their closing messages that, about abortion, about threats to democracy and the like. I think Democrats did a very good job of making this less a referendum on the president and the Democratic Party, and more about a choice between the two parties. Did candidate quality have something to do with it? Yes, I think that's evident in some of the in some of these races, but not all these races. I mean, it doesn't explain all of these races, and so it's fascinating. And I agree with you. I think it's something for Republicans to be very concerned about. Why, in this kind of environment, with these kind of fundamentals, which were, by all accounts, I mean, any measure you want to look at, should have yielded big Republican victories across the board, they simply didn't happen. And in a lot of these races, they didn't happen because independents decided they were going to vote for the In Party, they were going to vote for the status quo, which, again, is a huge break from history.
Yeah, and the thing that's also a little bit puzzling is if you just could isolate certain points, like if you could get a crystal ball a few days before the election, and the crystal ball would convey that the electorate nationally for the House will be R plus 3 or 4, probably, as you said, when the final numbers finally shake out and are formalized, because it takes days and weeks, especially because of California, etc. But if it's going to be in the R plus 3 or 4 range, as is likely, I think almost all of us would look at that one data point in isolation and say, okay, the polls were generally correct. This is a very good night for Republicans. They are going to have a red wave with that number. And of course, we didn't see the red wave. I think similarly, if you had just showed me Ron DeSantis's number, right, his margin in Florida, I would say, oh my gosh, this could be a tsunami type event across the country. If you told me that Republicans were going to win and net 4 House seats in New York potentially, I would have said, okay, that's a tsunami across the country. If you told me that Governor Stitt in Oklahoma, who is really struggling, very close in a lot of the polling, he ended up winning handily out there, I'd say, okay, that was fool's gold for the Democrats. This is going to be a great night for the Republicans. There are a number of zoom-in data points that absolutely would have indicated a big, big red wave. On the other hand, if you, 2 or 3 days before the election, showed me Patty Murray's margin of victory in Washington or Michael Bennett's margin of victory in Colorado, or the results of the House races, those 2 big ones in Pennsylvania, or in Virginia, 2 out of 3 sticking with the Democrats, I would have said, okay, hold your horses. This could be a very different type of night. It's just unusual to see different signposts pointing in very opposite directions and resulting in, I would say, one of the more confusing overall.
We'll be right back after these few messages.
Why? Why take a chance? Why risk a mistake? Why say something? We all have reasons why we choose to ignore the things that give us pause, that seem out of place, that don't feel right. The word why can either paralyze us or empower us to stand up and protect what we love. So if you see something, why do you say something?
I see safe for my family.
I see safe for my friends.
I see say for my students.
We see say for each other.
I see say because all of this matters.
We all have something worth protecting. A why that unifies this community we're all a part of. So protect your everyday. Report suspicious activity to local authorities. If you see something, say something.
Here's a thought.
Tell everybody.
Mount your phone to your dashboard and take us everywhere with the WFMD app.
A service of Frederick Air.
Really crystal clear.
From 930 WFMD.
Well, one of the features we offer during the week here on WFMD is take a look at what newsmakers are doing. And I thought we'd give Jan Gardner a send-off in that she is serving her last few minutes in office today. And there'll be a new boss in town starting on Monday. Her last initiative that she set up was Rural Roads. And here's the outline, basically, of what the Rural Roads program legacy is that she's leaving behind.
News Radio 930 WFMD wants you to hear directly from local newsmakers.
County Executive Jan Gardner.
The narrow lanes that wind their way through rural and rustic areas of our community offer outstanding views of rolling farmland and natural features, and they provide access to many of our community's cultural and historic resources. These lanes are hidden gems to many people, but have really become tourist attractions for some others. On weekends, it's common to find people driving or cyclists pedaling along these roadways. People enjoy the rural atmosphere and the connection that they find to nature. and artists actually frequently capture the scene. We know people value these roads, and we need to preserve them as integral parts of our agriculture and rural heritage. Our Livable Frederick Plan, which guides our actions, recognizes that preservation is crucial to maintaining our community's unique characteristics. It was designed to protect the scenic and historic qualities of the roads and the surrounding area. Now, one of the program's goals was to stabilize these roads without automatically widening or paving over dirt and gravel surfaces. Now, over the years, the focus gradually shifted, and it really became focused almost entirely on the surface type of the road. It became obvious that there were some legitimate competing interests between the challenges of maintaining these roads for the people who lived along them and protecting the scenic vistas and the rural roadways. Now, safety is always at the forefront of what we do in local government. Scenery and viewsheds may attract tourists, and they may be appreciated by local residents, but certainly the residents living along these roads have a right to have their roads upgraded and improved. It's understandable that people on these roads don't want steep slopes washing away when there are heavy rains, and they don't want plows to stop at the end of the paved street, effectively waiting for a different piece of equipment to do the balance of the snow removal. So to balance these competing interests and to refresh the program, I held a roundtable discussion that brought together stakeholders to help shape a path forward, to both look at safety and preservation of these treasured roadways to try to balance these interests that exist in our community. Last fall, the committee began tackling the issues, and they had four key charges. First was to review the current rural roads program and to look at what was working and what may need to be changed for eligible roads and to revise the guidelines of the program. Second, they were to create a list of candidate roads for the new program. Third, I asked them to make a recommendation to create a standing advisory board or commission and a program that would educate, promote, and increase tourism in Frederick County. The fourth charge to the committee was to complete a report and with recommendations and to have it to me within 12 months. So last month, they submitted their report to me. That's their work and their recommendations. The Rural and Scenic Roads Advisory Committee recommended several steps that the county could take, so the report also lists some subjective criteria that can be considered to designate roads with other unique or distinctive qualities. And there are two main types of subjective criteria for rustic roads. The first is the scenic or natural features along the road's borders. That could be rugged natural terrain, habitat suitable for native wildlife and vegetation, streams or vistas of agriculture or mountain scenery. The second kind of subjective criteria are roads that have historic or cultural significance. The roadway may be used to access a significant site like one of our historic bridges. So legislation has to wait for the next council to consider a new bill to create the actual Rustic Roads Commission.
Well, if you've been listening to WFMD for the past week, you know that we've been doing a Christmas Cash for Kids, and just thought I would pull a section of it out to let you know, in case you really haven't seen or heard, how all of Christmas Cash for Kids actually got started. So here is the story as it began way back on Monday at 6 a.m.
To Mr. Santa, Laughing Valley, North Pole.
When raindrops turn to snowflakes that fall from the face of the sky, when every day wants to be Christmas, then every child catches your eye.
Dear Santa, if Mom says to tell you, she wouldn't mind a small inheritance from a distant relative. I got a real book on how to keep the plants alive. Love, Everly.
With a heart full of wishes, tied up with ribbons of love, this gift that I give may seem small, but I'd like to wrap up a dream for you all.
Santa. I am, and I'm not sucking my thumb no more. But my sister Brenda does love Brian.
I'd like to wrap up a dream for you all.
Greatest fan.
It is 6:23 at WFMD. The morning mayor, Bob Miller, in studio. Ryan Hedrick, Christmas Cash for Kids. And I want to go out to the lobby now and bring in the third.
It's the manpower.
Manpower, yes.
Lobby.
Yeah, the manpower lobby.
Yeah, I think it's. I mean, there's more to it, but that's the sponsor of the of outside where Dave Schmidt is holding court right now.
Dave, maybe not.
Okay.
Okay. Well,
it's okay. It's,
yeah, yeah, we'll figure it out. Anyway, we are streaming live at Facebook, so go ahead and share. And if you'd like to donate, 301-694-9363, 301-694-WFMD. We always have new generations of people tuning into Christmas Cash for Kids. And, you know, the morning mayor, Bob Miller, has been doing this for nearly 30 years. And I want to get his insight into the history. This Christmas Cash for Kids program started in 1972. And, Bob, it started really innocently enough when one radio DJ locally just wanted to make a difference. Why don't you take it from there?
Yeah, I mean, he was just working the night shift, and a family called up and said, hey, you know what? I know of a family who is really down on their luck, and they need some help for Christmas. Is there anything you can do? And so he got the idea to go down and talk to his general manager at the time. His name was Howard Johnson. It was over at Z104 and right across the road. They're now a Chinese restaurant. But they said, sure, go ahead, see what you can do. And they raised, they raised some money, and they did something which was kind of different. They went out and bought the toys themselves, and they got dressed up as Santa Claus, and they went up to this area. Now, you got to remember that not every part of Frederick looks like downtown Frederick or Urbana or Middletown or Walkersville. And they went down a dirt road, and they drove up to this house, really kind of a shack. Looked at that and said, knocked on the door and said, hey, we're here for Christmas Cash for Kids. Well, it wasn't even Christmas Cash for Kids at that time, but they just said, hey, we're here for this family. I'm sorry, they don't live here. They live behind us.
What was it called initially?
There was nothing. I mean, there was never a name to it.
There was no branding to it?
No, no, not at all. And so they knocked on the door in the back, and you go from a shack to a shanty. They knock on the door, dressed as Santa Claus. They've got, it's radio, so they've got other people there. And a little girl answers the door and says, my mommy told me you weren't coming this year, but I always knew you'd come, Santa. And that was the beginning of Christmas Cash for Kids. So the next year is when the branding happened. The next year is when, the legendary Kemosabe Joe was there at that time. But he wasn't there. I actually talked to the guy who was the original guy who answered the phone.
Wow.
And said to me, I told him, hey, I'd love for you to tell us the story. And he says, well, get me a hotel, buy me a plane ticket, pay me this, and I'll give you the story. And I'm like, have a nice day. So, I guess his heart didn't grow three times the size. But, but since then, Christmas Cash for Kids have helped countless people. It was at another radio station, and Ron Ross, good friend of ours, who is not going to be here today, but will be here tomorrow. He's taking care of some family. And we love him for that. But the radio station where it was at decided they weren't going to do it any longer. So he brought it over with Phyllis Betson and Mark Williams and said, hey, would you guys be interested in doing Christmas Cash for Kids? And I said yes immediately. And then I said, I should ask my boss. But Frank Mitchell was absolutely behind it. And we've had it since 2000, and it's been a holiday tradition. My Christmas season doesn't start until the end of Christmas Cash for Kids.
So last year, I believe those numbers are correct, we helped 1,392 children, 708 families. And this year, we keep saying it every year, but this year I cannot state it loudly enough. The need is so great because the economy is in trouble. And here we are, Frederick County Christmas Cash for Kids. An annual tradition continues right here on the Morning News Express. We're minutes in. We're literally 18 minutes into this thing.
That about wraps it up for Weekend Free Talk Express. We hope you enjoyed some of the interviews brought back from this past week's broadcast on Free Talk WFMD. Join us again next time. Until then, I'm Bob Dacey.
Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com, a service of Holtzapfel Heating and Air Conditioning.